Welcome to The Fantastic Pour, a proud member of the Fire & Water Podcast Network. This is the podcast that combines comics, cocktails, and conversation for your listening pleasure. I am your host, Brett Young. And because there's always a crisis right around the corner, I am joined by the co-host of the Monitor Tapes, DC Dave. Dave, welcome to the Fantastic Lounge. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. What a setup you have here. This is this is amazing. This beats the monitor satellite. We don't have a lounge, nothing like that up there. I may have to talk to Doug, my co-host, about setting up a nice little bar area, because this outclasses anything we have up there on that satellite.
Well, I'm glad to hear it. I will say we don't have anything to beam people into the lounge or anything like that. Of course, they don't accidentally go to another Earth or anything that way, though. So we just have bouncers. You know, we just kind of do it the regular way. But yeah, well, I'm glad I'm really happy to have you here. As I mentioned, Dave is the co-host of the Monitor Tapes. Just mention for those of us in the lounge who aren't familiar with the Monitor Tapes, what it's about?
Sure. I like 40-year-old comic books, well, 41 years now. So I co-host the Monitor Tapes, which is a mm-hmm. Crisis on Infinite Earths podcast with my buddy Doug. And he and I have a magazine format type show where we talk to our friends here on the internet. It's very similar in style to your show here. Instead of us being in a lounge, we're at the back of a comic shop where we sit down and chit chat with our internet friends about Crisis on Infinite Earths and what they enjoyed about it, what they maybe didn't enjoy. And then, you know, we find something specific about Crisis to chat with our guests about. And really, it's about finding out those individual experiences that everybody has had with this story that is so epic that 40 years later, we still all want to talk about. We still all have our opinions about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm working on weaseling my way onto an episode as well, because I'm one of the weirdos. I feel like I didn't know it at the time, but after listening to your show, I'm one of the weirdos who actually started with issue one and read this the whole way.
Doug might throw
as
you
it
out.
Was coming out. So I really feel like I'm the oddball of the Monitor Tapes. But yeah, it's a great show. I really enjoy it. And I'm a huge Crisis fan. I mean, like I mentioned, you know, when I was a kid, I collected it when it came out, and it's a seminal moment of my comic book reading life. It absolutely is. And when we do eventually talk about it on your show, it's going to be a lot of me talking about the Crisis in general. And oddly enough, it's going to be a lot of Phil Collins too. I'll explain that at the time, but there is a big connection there for me. So
yeah, that leaves me with a great hook. That's the kind of story I look forward to hearing about on the Crisis, on the Monitor Tape. So yeah, looking forward to that.
All right, great. Well, let's get on with the show. So sometime ahead of recording each podcast, I ask my guests two things: choose an alcohol, beverage, or ingredient that they enjoy, and choose a comic book character that they love. Now, based on the answers, I come up with a cocktail for us to create and choose a comic book to discuss. So Dave, please tell our friends in the lounge your chosen beverage and comic book character. Let's start with your character.
Well, my character is Superman. And if you've heard me on my show, for those of you that haven't heard my show, you'll understand that Superman is the pinnacle of DC Comics superheroes for me. He's the pinnacle of superheroes to me. Just in general, I think Captain America would be the one that comes a close second, and a very close second. But for me, it's always been Superman. It's always been truth, justice, and I invoke to say now, but the American way. And I think it's, for me, what that ideal is. And to me, it's the ideal that anybody can do it. We all have it in our hearts to be good and to be truthful and to seek justice, to seek the things that are the framers of our Constitution wanted for the people that were going to inhabit this country, that it was here for everyone, that we were going to make sure it was good and right and righteous. And I think Superman really exemplifies everything that's best about this world and everything that we can all strive to be.
Well, that was really well put. Yeah, I agree. I am a big Superman fan as well. Like you said, he's someone that at his best, when depicted at his best, is something to strive for. Not that we can lift a building or that we can, you know, fly to the moon or anything like that, but that we can be our best self and shine that beacon to others as well, and you know, pay it forward. So I was really happy you chose him. It was kind of funny. It's my second, you know, this is the second year of doing this podcast that nobody had picked Superman yet. So I guess he's almost too obvious a choice for some people. But yeah, I was really excited to talk about him. Now we are going to narrow it down a little bit with this particular issue that we're going to talk about. So we're going to talk about more about, we can talk about Superman in general, but we're going to talk about Superman a lot during the Silver Age. Because he's almost such a big character, you can't talk about everything. We'll be here for you know, we'll be here for 5 hours, you know, talking about if we talk about in general. So it's going to be more about Silver Age Superman, but in general, that was really well put what you said, Dave. I appreciate that. So
Thank you.
yeah. So obviously, Superman, real name Clark Kent. Perhaps you've heard of him. First appearance, Action Comics issue 1 from June 1938. If you have a copy of that lying around, you know, put it in a bag. Right away, and then you know, go call somebody. Created by Jerry Siegel and Joe Shuster. We will get back to Superman soon. In the meantime, Dave, tell us about your beverage of choice.
My beverage of choice is the lemon drop.
Now, why the lemon drop?
So I have a specific story with the lemon drop. I'm not much of an alcohol drinker, just occasionally taking part in drinking. And I usually need my alcohol to be fruity, to be sweet. I'm just not a bitter alcohol drinker. So it's always disappointed me that, like beer, for instance, I can't go to a bar and just drink beer with the buddies. It just
Right.
never was a thing I could do. But one time, my wife and I went to a concert. We went to go see Erasure at the House of Blues in San Diego, the 80s band. But this was probably 20 years ago now. And we happened to the restaurant portion of the House of Blues. And they said, "Hey, you know, it's happy hour right now. We're having a special on lemon drop, specifically lemon drop martinis." And we said, "Hey, okay, that sounds good." So we started drinking and we just got a couple sips in, and the effects had not hit us yet. And the waitress comes over and says, "Hey, happy hour is wrapping up. Do you want another round of drinks before, you know, I know you've just
Yeah.
started these, but do you want another round of drinks?" "Sure, let's get another round of drinks." Wow. Well, that was a night to remember from the perspective of the lemon drop martini. So we have appreciated that drink ever since, and I made it my mission to try to find good lemon drop recipes, and I appealed to you for a good lemon drop recipe so that we could partake together, because if I'm going to partake in a alcoholic beverage, it's going to be a lemon drop.
Well, very good. That so a lot. Some people aren't, but you were very specific about what you wanted, which was fine. Some people just say, you know, cinnamon or a lemon or something like that, and we go from there. But you wanted your lemon drop, so I was like, all right, let's do it. So I tried to find a little twist here and there to do with it, but I'm looking forward to this recipe. Now, before we go over the recipe, let's talk a little bit more about the lemon drop in a segment I like to call Secret Porgins. So you get that, Dave? See what I did there? You know, secret origin. I've been
Very nice.
explaining this for over a year, and since episode one, everybody's like, yeah, we get it. We get it, Brett. So very good. Okay. So here we
It's
go.
amazing. It's amazing, Brett. It's
Thank
amazing.
you. Thank you, Dave. That's what I'm looking for. So here we go. The origin of the lemon drop martini. Thanks to chilledmagazine.com and jeffreymorganthaler.com for research, believe it or not. In the 70s, the sexual revolution led to single women, for the first time, going out to bars by themselves. To capitalize on this, many bars began to develop cocktails to appeal to female customers. As a result, sweet, fancy drink concoctions such as the Harvey Wallbanger, the Mudslide, and the Grasshopper were big hits with the ladies, as was the legendary drink we're about to discuss. In 1969, Norman J. Hobday opened a new bar called Henry Africa's in San Francisco on the northwest corner of Broadway and Polk Streets. Hobday couldn't afford to fully remodel the space, so he decided to bring in a bunch of plants and hang ferns everywhere. This was a brilliant and inexpensive way for him to create a more welcoming atmosphere for both women and men. becoming the first of many fern bars of the 1970s. And it's believed in that very fern bar that Hovde created the lemon drop, which was a lemony vodka cocktail, getting its name from the lemon drop candies that have a similar sweet and sour flavor. Dale DeGoff, the legendary bartender known as King Cocktail, who pioneered modern mixology since the 1980s, confirmed that the lemon drop was born at Henry Africa's. He also had this to say: Cheryl Cook, the lady who invented the Cosmopolitan's original recipe of roses, lime juice, and triple sec, claimed it was an absolute citron variation of the lemon drop. So, in a sense, the lemon drop could have been the spark that started the whole cocktail revival. The lemon drop was elevated into a greater popularity in 2006 when guest chef Rachael Ray made the citrusy drink on the Oprah Winfrey Show and proclaimed it her favorite cocktail. So there you go. It's one of those cocktails, especially like in the 80s, 90s, when places like TGI Fridays and places like that were getting very popular too, was something you could always find. There were always variations of it. It became a very popular go-to cocktail. So when you said you went to your wife concert with your wife and were able to and they had those on the happy hour menu, that makes sense. That makes sense because it's a good sort of lemony variation for people who don't want to drink a straight martini, where that's like a bridge too far. So it really is. And by the way, for everybody in the lounge, all that noise you heard in the background, that was my son eating. So if you hear any clanging and stuff like that, this is the way it goes sometimes. Sometimes you got to bring the family to the lounge. Sometimes they got to stop in. So anyway, so let's so Dave, it's happy hour. So let's make this drink. Now I call this the Lemony Luthor. So Dave, tell our friends what you need.
Well, that's an amazing name for an amazing drink. Okay, so let's talk about what you need to make this Lemony Luther, this fantastic drink. So, if you're going to do just one, why you would do just one, I don't know, because you need more than just one. But for we're just going to talk about what it takes to make one of these. So, you're going to get yourself 2 ounces of vodka of your choice, a half an ounce of Cointreau or triple sec. Then you're going to take a half an ounce of fresh squeezed lemon juice. And I cannot emphasize how important it is to get some fresh lemons and make the fresh squeezed lemon juice yourself. That really makes a difference in these drinks.
Absolutely.
A quarter ounce of simple syrup and then one twist of lemon. Now, you can't make a lemon drop martini with just the alcohol and just the drink. You have to rim these things. The sugar on the rim just really kind of tops it off. It's like a margarita. You can't make a margarita without salt. You can't make a lemon drop martini without a little bit of something special along the rim of the glass. So you're going to want to take a half a cup of granulated sugar, and then you're going to take the zest from one lemon. Now, what are you going to do with all this? Well, first, the best thing to do is take some martini glasses, throw them in your freezer for a little bit. Get them nice and chilled because that really makes a difference on this. You're going to take the half a cup of granulated sugar, you're going to put that on a plate. You're going to take the lemon zest, you're going to put that into the sugar and rub it into the sugar with your fingers until the sugar, not your fingers, are tinted yellow and fragrant. And it really makes a nice scent when you've got that all nicely mixed in together. Then you're going to moisten the rim of the chilled martini glass with that juiced lemon. Rim the glass with that lemon sugar, and then you're going to set that aside. Now, you're going to take your shaker. You're going to fill that thing with ice. You're going to add in your vodka, your Cointreau, your lemon juice, and your simple syrup to the shaker. Then you give that thing a very nice shake, maybe even a Superman type shake. And then you're going to strain that into that martini glass. You're going to garnish that bad boy with a lemon twist. Sit back and enjoy.
Very well done. Very well said. Thank you, Dave. So, Dave and I are going to enjoy our Lemony Luthor as I tell Dave about the time the monitor came in for a Singapore sling and some fish tacos. Everyone in the
That sounds
lounge
good.
is well. Yeah, this does sound good, actually. Everyone in the lounge is welcome to drink along and listen to this promo break.
Cheers.
Worlds would live.
Worlds would die.
And DC Comics would never be the same again.
Crisis on Infinite Earths, the crossover so epic it reached every corner of the DC multiverse. Join DC Dave
and Doug Adamson as we discuss The Monitor Tapes,
a Crisis on Infinite Earths podcast.
Find us on your favorite podcatcher and join the discussion at themonitortapes.com.
And we're back. A wave of antimatter just tried to get in without ID. The bouncers don't mess around here in the Fantastic Lounge, Dave. He was not getting in.
Thank goodness.
So we're all safe. Anyway, now that we've had a chance to taste our lemony Luthor, what do you think?
Well, I mean, this is, I dare say this might be my kryptonite. Luthor did a good job of creating something really good here. This drink is fantastic. I love the recipe that you found. It's sweet, and I like sweet.
Mm-hmm.
Without it being too sour or too overpowering.
Mm-hmm.
The alcohol, like I said, I'm not big on alcohol, so I don't want to necessarily taste a bunch of alcohol. I don't. Now, maybe I didn't put enough in there, but I followed the recipe. I thought it was a good mix. I worry about how easy it would be to down two or three of these, because it certainly would be easy to do.
Yeah, well, and the nice thing about this recipe, too, is you can adjust it to your tastes. In other words, if you like a citrusy cocktail, just add a little more lemon juice. If you like it a little sweeter, you can add a little more simple syrup. By the way, if I didn't state before, simple syrup is basically just sugar and water. And basically what it is, it's like 2-to-1, 2 parts water, 1 part sugar. And you can heat it up in a pot. You do it that way and set it aside. Or you can literally, what I do is I'll just take 2 shot glasses of water and one and like half a shot glass of granulated sugar, dump that in, stir it up, let it sit for a minute, and you're fine. And that's a good way to make simple syrup. You know, it's nothing fancy. It's just sugar, water, and obviously you can use as much as of that. That counters the citrus, so it's not too tart. But you can kind of mix that to how you want. Cointreau is as we were talking about before. Cointreau is basically a high end triple sec, which is an orange tinted liqueur. So you can use that, which still has booze in it, but it counteracts the vodka a little bit to smooth that out a little bit as well. So you have all these ingredients coming together. You got a little sweet, you got a little tart, and then you got the sharpness of the alcohol. And yes, it makes for a nice concoction. It's a nice sipping drink. It looks classy. It looks nice, especially up in if you have a nice martini glass for it. You know, rim the sugar. It's fun. It's something you can pretty much get at any restaurant or bar. If you ask for a lemon drop martini, any bartender worth his salt is going to know what that is. So you can definitely get that wherever you go, where all fine vodkas are sold. So now may I ask, what vodka did you use?
I used, what am I thinking of? The most common vodka out there.
Stoli, Absolut, Smirnoff.
Absolut.
Absolut.
That's what it is.
Absolut. Absolut. Okay. Yeah. Very good. Yeah. Yeah. And that's the nice thing about vodka. Vodkas are sort of a pretty level playing field. You don't have to spend a lot of money on vodka. You can get a nice vodka at a very reasonable rate. I use Smirnoff all the time, to be honest with you. It's it's good enough for James Bond in the original Bond movies when he started drinking vodka martinis. That's what he used. He used Smirnoff, not Stoli. He used Smirnoff. But it's a good quality vodka. It is inexpensive, and you can't go wrong. You can get it. You know, it's one of those vodkas you get at various sizes too, so you don't have to spend a ton of money on it. So it's a pretty economical drink as well, I would say. It's not going to cost you a lot of money.
No, so. I agree with that. And of course, it's nice to have it on hand. I actually didn't have the ingredients on hand, so it was a good opportunity to restock. But I have to know, Brett, mm-hmm. What did you think of the drink?
You know, I really enjoyed it. I haven't had one of these in a long time. So it was kind of a nice departure. I drink when I'm not making cocktails for the podcast, or, you know, occasionally I'll make one for my wife for fun, like we just did one for Valentine's Day and stuff like that. But I'm more of a red wine drinker, at least in the winter. In the summer, I'll drink lighter beers pretty much. So it's rare that I'll have a martini, but I do enjoy one when I have it. This particular recipe, like I said, you know, I always like the lemon drop martini. So it was a fun cocktail. So I really liked it. I used probably a little less of the simple syrup because I don't like too much sweetness in my cocktail. And I used a touch more of the citrus. It had a nice bite to it. And I like to kind of let the vodka come through a little bit a little bit more, but that's me. So for my wife's, I added a little more. She likes it a little sweeter, so I added a little more sugar to hers. Because I can't, whenever I'm making these, I can't make one without making one for her too. I mean, what are you kidding me? I'm not crazy. Of course I'm gonna make one for her too.
Absolutely.
So yeah, so I really enjoyed it as well. Yeah, I was very, very
Fantastic.
happy, and I'm glad you chose this. This was a fun drink to make. So anything else you'd like to say about your Lemony Luthor?
Well, I heard good reviews from my wife. She said it was equally as
Perfect.
good. Of course, like you can't make one without making one for her. So,
Very good. Very
yeah,
good.
she was the first arbiter of the recipe. She gave it a two martini glasses up.
That's good to hear. It's funny. A lot of this is happening with a lot of my guests now that I hear about that afterwards. It's like, oh, the wife liked it? Good. Then everything's fine. That's all I care about. So, very good. All right. Well, while we enjoy our Lemony Luthor in the Fantasta Lounge, how about some fine literature? The comic we'll be discussing that involves Superman is Action Comics, issue 335. Publisher DC Comics, cover date March 1966, on sale date January 27th, 1966, cover price 12 cents. Story title Luthor's First Victory Over Superman. Writer Leo Dorfman, artist Al Plastino, editor Mort Weisinger. Cover art was by Kurt Swan and George Klein. Thank you, Mike's Amazing World of Comics, for that information. So, Dave, would you like to tell our friends in the Fantasta Lounge what this story is all about?
Absolutely, it would be my pleasure. The story opens with Superman experiencing some super performance anxiety on his super missions. As Supes continues to spiral with this anxiety, Lex Luthor and Brainiac enjoy his despair from afar. It turns out the evil duo have been using psychological warfare to make Superman have a mental breakdown. Luthor says it's payback for Superman revealing Lex's criminal past to his space wife, Ardora. The president, in shadow, asks former Daily Planet editor, now Senator, Perry White, along with Lois, Jimmy, and Clark, to get Superman to meet with General Blade, the Army psychological warfare expert. And he puts Supes through a variety of tests. Superman fails. And General Blade tells Perry that Superman may as well hang up his cape. Later, in secret, General Blade removes his mask and reveals he was Lex Luthor the whole time, and his assistant was actually Brainiac. A distraught Superman goes berserk on a movie set, punching wooden stand-ups of Lex and Brainiac that he expertly painted before punching, as Lex and Brainiac stop by to gloat. While secretly miniaturized in the Lexaphone satellite. But Superman only pretended to be rattled to lure the villains into being caught. Acting! When Superman learns that Luthor's vendetta was caused by Adora's heartbreak, he decides to let them go. Luthor and Brainiac think they've broken Superman's grasp and hightailed it for Lexor, but Superman throws the Lexaphone past them into space and goes all the way to the planet Lexor. Landing before Lex and Brainiac arrive. The Lexaphone lands and doses Ardora with amnesium gas, which causes her to forget Lex's criminal past. Thus, Ardora and Lex's relationship is reconciled by Superman, robbing Ardora of her memories as she warmly greets her returning husband. Luthor admits that Superman has settled their debt for the time being, but the next time they meet, it's gonna be a fight.
I was going to start with what did you think of the story overall, but we're going to get to that anyway. So let's talk the cover. Would you like to describe the cover for everyone in the Fantastic Lounge first? What did you think of the cover?
Sure. It's your classic Silver Age cover, which I think for some people they're like, oh God, it's a super Silver Age comic cover. I think it's fantastic. It is it brings me joy. It just it's got Superman, there's action on it. I love Kurt Swan. It's got text on the cover. If I had my 12 cents, my dime and two shiny pennies, and I saw Luthor's first victory over Superman emblazoned on the cover, I'd be plucking that 12 cents down in a heartbeat.
Absolutely.
It's got the checkerboard from
Yes.
the 60s, mid 60s. Which is a DC staple at that time. Superman's punching Lex and Brainiac. I mean, this is Silver Age at its best, honestly.
Yeah, reading this, as we say in the network, brought me so much joy as well. It was just, everything about this was so much fun. This particular issue, now we had talked a little inside baseball. We had talked about a couple different issues that we were going to do, and I mentioned a few. We went with this one primarily because I actually own this comic book. I have no, and here's the thing, I have no idea where I acquired it. I have a couple issues of Action Comics from the 300s. And I have no memory of where I acquired these at all. I don't know if I just got lucky in some back bin at a comic store or at a, at a garage sale or something. I literally have no memory of it. So, but anyway, but I have these, and I hadn't read this thing in probably, I don't know, 20, 25 years or something like that. So I didn't really have much of a memory about the episode, about the actual story, but I fondly remember the cover, yeah, with Superman punching, putting his fist through a wooden Brainiac stand up, and there's one of Lex that's kind of crumbled to the ground, and then you have this UFO looking contraption called the Lexaphone, which is just floating overhead, just mocking him. It's just it's Lex talking through this, just making fun of, talking crap to Superman and everything about. And it's just terrific. It's completely overwrought. They don't need nearly that much text for, for what he's saying, because they over explain, but who cares? It's just fun. It's silly. It's everything you want in a Silver Age comic. Absolutely.
Exactly right. Now let's just take a moment since you mentioned Brainiac. Let's look at Lex. I mean, Lex is fairly nicely dressed in this wooden appearance of his. He's got a nice button-down collared shirt. He's wearing slacks. I mean, I don't know if this is foreshadowing to the future Lex Luthor. Of course, it's not, but he is very nicely dressed. I gotta admit, and Lex was a snappy dresser there, or at least Superman thought he was in the Silver Age.
Well, he knew he was going to go see his space wife, so he had to dress up a little bit. So a little nattily clad, a little too gray. He could have maybe add thrown in some color like he does late, when he finally gets, his 70s costume of purple and green, so he could have thrown in a little color. But yeah, so this is sort of a paunchy Lex Luthor too. He is not the muscle bound fit Luthor he is today. He's a little closer to what like John Byrne originally had him as. Not that out of shape, but he's got a little, he's got the dad bod going, basically. He's got a little bit, he's got some belly, but he's keeping it together, but he looks like a middle-aged man, basically.
He sure
So,
does. He sure
yeah.
does.
And now Brainiac's in his tidy whities and spandex shirt, so he's got to stay a little more fit. He's got to keep it together a little bit more if he's going to pull that off. But
Absolutely.
yeah,
Yeah,
so
this is the 60s, 50s and 60s Brainiac, not the one that came in the 70s. I think that was in the 70s when he became, or was that the early 80s
'80s.
at
It
that
was
point?
yeah, when
Oh
he
yeah.
becomes more of like a robot type looking characters. Is that what you're talking about? Like when he's
Yeah,
more,
more
yeah.
of
The
the
silver robot, yeah.
yeah, more of the I guess that's Bronze Age a little bit, but more of the superpowers Brainiac than
Yes.
the super friends Brainiac.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, he's gone
Now,
through some incarnations. But yeah, sorry, go ahead.
oh, I was just going to say one thing we should mention about this issue is that we both had to hunt it down because this one is not available on the app.
I want to correct myself on that. I originally couldn't find it on the app, but it is on the app now.
It
Yeah,
is.
so you can get it on the DC Infinite Ultra Humanite website. Now, I don't know if you need the high end or not. I have the higher end subscription, so maybe it's possible it's only available on that. I don't know, as opposed to the normal subscription. I'm not 100% sure about that, but I was able to find it on there.
Okay, is it in a
So
trade, perhaps, in
no, it's the
there?
single issue. It's the single
Really?
issue. Yeah.
Okay.
So if you put in the search just Action Comics 335, it should come up.
Okay, I'll have to go
So
back and look for it.
yeah.
I had a alternative way to get a hold of a copy of this, and so I was
Yeah.
able to do that. which will serve us later when we talk about something specific.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I do want to talk about, because I had the actual physical issue too. I did take photos of along with the show notes. I'm going to put that in the gallery. But I took pictures of all the ads that were in the magazine. And I think you wanted to talk about the letters page, correct?
Yes, I
Okay.
do
All
want to
right.
talk about the
Well,
letters
yes,
page
we will
too.
get to that. So, but let's delve inside a little bit, talk about story a little bit. We don't have to go beat by beat, but we can kind of do it in general. We kind of dropped into Superman is flying around Metropolis, and there's a spill of radioactive fission blocks. So which were just in like a normal looking truck, I guess. I don't know.
Which says on the side, danger atomic material.
Yes. And but looks like it's in something that's about as secure as like an ice cream truck, more or less. So your Amazon delivery van or
I
something.
got
So
such a kick out of that. Just
yeah.
and then all of a sudden, in the page, you see these, they're almost like gold bars, but they're red, I guess.
Yeah,
You
like
know.
reddish, yeah, like magentaish,
Yeah.
yeah, hue. So I did look this up to see if this was an actual thing. So I think what they're referring to is there were blocks made of concrete that were used to absorb radiation around reactor cores. And obviously this is we're kind of coming out of the atomic age here, but going into we're still in the Cold War stage and everything. So I think that's what this is about. I think that's what that was supposed to be about, but he's just the stuff spills on the street, just on the street. The drivers run away, and Superman's not sure what to do. Now he gets chastised by these drivers, but I'm like, you're the guys who crashed his truck to begin with.
I,
Yeah, go ahead.
well, and then these two drivers, yeah, they chastise him and they're just kind of standing there in just kind of suits. But
Yeah.
then when the cleanup crew comes in a few minutes later, they're in full on, like almost like human bomb type covers.
Right. Yes. I don't know. Maybe they thought at this point they weren't long for this world. So they're like, well, we might as well just step up to Superman. Doesn't matter what can happen at this point. So maybe that was it. But of course, watching this, we have Lex Luthor, who always has a screen and he can look at anything he wants, which is fantastic. It's great about the Silver Age. They can see anything at any time. Cameras everywhere. Surveillance state. So surveillance state was in the 50s and 60s, everybody. He's really happy to see Superman, and he's gloating about how he earlier had used a hypno machine to make Superman think that there was a giant glacier that was going to destroy Metropolis, and just laughed at him if he was trying to stop this glacier. It didn't exist. And of course, this is all stemming from if he didn't hate Superman enough, he's angry because I guess in a previous issue, Superman told his wife Ardora that Lex's wife Ardora that Lex is an actual Earth criminal, not the hero that everyone on Lexor thinks of. So now, were you familiar with Lexor ahead of this?
I
What do you
mean,
know about Lexor?
I remember something about Lexor, but
Yeah.
it has been probably 40 plus years since I've even
Right.
thought about Lexor. So
Right.
I remember that Lex was the hero of Lexor, but that's, you get that from the story too, but I forgot that he was married.
Yeah, so I looked it up, and I guess this stems from a story where Luthor wanted to fight Superman, I guess even up. So they had to find a planet with a red sun. So they find this place, they find this planet, and I guess the people, the inhabitants aren't doing well, and Lex Luthor finds a way to, like, more or less, I think, help them with their farming or something like that, and is able to save them. They think of him as a hero, because he basically saves their civilization because of he fixes some robots they had, which were there that kind of, I guess, work the fields or something. And they all love him, and they basically, deify him and make statues of him. And of course, Ardora is this woman on Lexor who falls in love with Lex, and they get married. That's more or less. And then he just randomly goes to Lexor whenever he wants. It's kind of his getaway. as you would, just hop on, you hop on whatever rocket ship you have available and you fly to Lexor. So anyway, but he's mad because more or less, if you think about it, this whole comic boils down to Superman broke the bro code, more or less. He told Lex's woman that he was bad news, and he's not too happy about it. So,
This is probably the most legitimate beef that Luther has had with Superman ever.
that's true. That's true. Or at least during the Silver Age. Yeah, I mean, this is legitimate. If Superman ratted him out like this, yeah, because let Lex have his side planet. I mean, he's helping the people there. He's not doing anything bad. So if this woman loves him for what he is over there, then just let that lie,
And if he wants to hang out over there, then he's not on Earth. He's not causing any trouble on Earth.
Yeah,
Just let him
exactly.
be.
Exactly. I agree. But anyway, so Superman's all still. He doesn't have any confidence. He doesn't know what's going on. Now he goes back to the, he takes the bus to the Daily Planet instead of flying there because he's just all messed up. And so now were you, so he gets to the Daily Planet and you find the editor is not Perry White. It's this guy named, what it, I just lost his name, Van Benson.
Van Benson.
Did you have any knowledge of Van Benson or did you know anything about Mr. Benson?
I do not. This is the first I've ever heard of him. I know a lot of Silver Age. I clearly don't know all of it. And now there, the great thing about the Silver Age is the editor's notes. So I'm gonna have to go back and read Lois Lane number 62, which they mention Perry White was appointed, not voted in, as a U.S. senator. So I'm curious to see what that's all about.
Yeah, I had no knowledge of, I know in the more modern comics he's run for mayor now, but I had no knowledge that he was once a US senator. Or how that came about, or that there was this Van Benson. I had no idea about him. I did look it up real quick. I think he may, in reality, be a or in reality in comic book reality. I think he's like a CIA spy or something like that. He's not a bad guy, I don't think. But somebody in the Fantastic Lounge might know more about this. I'm looking at you, Martin Gray, or. Or somebody, or I'm looking at you, Ward Hill Terry, or someone like that who might know more about this. But I think, yeah, I think Van Benson might turn out to be a CIA spy and was something along those lines. So,
Interesting.
and I could be wrong. I tried to look up some information about it. There wasn't too much. But anyway, so they get a call from the president, or they get a call from Perry White that they need Clark and Lois. And Jimmy to come to DC, and when they see Perry, he gets a call from the president in shadow, and tells them that they need, Superman is their first line of defense, and they need to make sure he's doing all right. So they want to run him through all these tests, and that is more or less all you see of Lois and Jimmy and Perry pretty much in this issue. This is not one for the side characters much because I feel like every Silver Age issue is Superman playing horrific mind games on Lois so he can keep his secret identity. But you don't get any in this issue, unfortunately. So if you're looking for that, we can't help you here. But so what did you think? What did you think when he was like going through these tests and everything like that?
Well, I felt bad for him because, what in the world is going on with him? This is not right. This is something is going on with him, and we just can't figure it out. And I mean, to kind of get into his psyche like that, first of all, I will say, well, I'll get to that in just a minute. I think these different tests that he has to go through, I certainly get convinced that he's ready to hang up the cape, that he is just distraught and that he is just beside himself trying to figure out what in the world is going on here.
Yeah. And now he does pass the initial tests that they do for him are, and these are tests he's doing like at the Pentagon, in case I didn't specify that, or more about his actual powers, like his speed and his strength and everything like that. And he passes that. But then they start doing kind of more decision-making type tests for him. And that's where things go awry. And what'd you think of the bombs that he that they they painted Luthor and Brainiac's faces on them?
I mean, I don't. I so they set up these tables. They take it. They take the tests outside, and they set up these tables, and they have these, round. It's hard to tell if they're globes, because in some of the art they're globes, and other art they look like cookies, like big or big pizza pies on, standing up. They look two dimensional, not three dimensional,
It's very
but.
true.
Each one of them, there's two of them. One has Luther's face on it, and one has Brainiac's face on it. And I mean, I guess if Superman is that far gone with his anxiety that just seeing their faces on these, are they a bomb, are they not a bomb test is enough to kind of set him off, I guess. It makes sense. It is certainly funny to see, Luther's face on a. On a big slice of pizza. Oh,
Smiling,
big pizza pie.
too. They're all,
Smiling.
yeah, they're he and Brainiac are smiling, and this is great. So yeah, he fails the test. He punches one of them is supposed to have a bomb in him, one is supposed to not. He punches one, it blows up. He punches the other one, it blows up. Turned out they had bombs in both of them to see if he could figure it out. He couldn't. So he's woe's me. And of course, based on this 5 minute of testing, they decide that the most powerful person on the earth should no longer be a superhero and send him on his way. So he leaves and they call, okay, there's one last panel for the side characters. They call Perry and he's like, ah, well, here we go. I guess there's so much for Superman. That's it. I guess let's wrap it up. But
Take
then,
it home, boys.
yeah, but then, we go back to the lab at the Pentagon, and who are these scientists in reality?
And it turns out to be Luther and Dun dun
Yes,
dun.
who could have thought with rubber masks on that they peel up and laugh about it. So, and of course they're gloating about how they've been using all their ingenious nature. And Luther says right out, he goes, if he hadn't told my wife I was a criminal, maybe I wouldn't have gone to these extremes. He's really mad about this. He's not gonna, he's still talking about this. He's really mad about it. And I get it. So they find out that Superman went to a Hollywood studio and expertly carved out some wooden stand-ups of Brainiac and Luthor and painted them accurately, did everything, and then just punches them. I don't know why he couldn't just punch something to begin with, but he wanted to do that. He wanted to make these lifelike and well done. He does a great job painting the wood. He does a great job, and then he punches holes in him. So there you go.
Yeah,
So
makes perfect sense.
yeah, and then we get the appearance of my favorite character from this book, and that's the Lexaphone. Are
Yes.
you?
It reminds me of Mr. Mind's little ship that he was
Oh.
flying around in during Crisis in the All-Star Squadron crossovers. And I know that's a deep cut, but
That is a deep cut, but I know exactly what you're talking about. I even remember the covers for those. Absolutely, yeah, that's great.
yeah.
Yeah, so basically, Brainiac used his shrinking ray, and so they go inside a small space. They shrink a spaceship. They're inside the spaceship inside the Lexaphone, which is this floating green and red. What I don't even know what shape it's like a.
Is it eight-sided?
I
Maybe like,
maybe like an octagonal or something like that shaped
yeah.
floating thing, which Luthor is able to broadcast his voice at, even though they're inside. I don't know why they had to be inside of it. I don't know why they just do this remotely, but they're inside this thing and they're mocking Superman and everything. And they're saying that there's a bomb in Metropolis that'll blow up if he destroys the Lexaphone. And everybody on the street's like, no, don't destroy the Lexaphone. So and then he,
Well,
of
I
course,
mean,
yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say such a Silver Age conceit, right? Like
Yeah.
you've got Lex and Brainiac shrinking themselves down with the shrinking ray. And of course, we had an appearance from Kandor, because you can't explain
Yes.
shrinking ray and Brainiac without having the bottled city of Kandor make an appearance. Now, I don't know where this lines up with Superman eventually having the Bottle City in his fortress, whatever. For whatever reason, we have an appearance here. Continuity is not really that important here in the Silver Age. Although this is a continuity heavy issue with the Lexor, the,
True.
Senator Perry White and so forth. So anyway, we're coming into the story midstream here, I guess. But the conceit of shrinking down into a UFO space flying saucer type thing and then hiding inside a floating octagonal beach
Whatever shape
ball.
that is, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, it's not round, it's
Yeah.
definitely got sides to it. But it's about the size of a beach ball, and it's flying around. Like you said, it's why couldn't they just broadcast their voice? I don't know. It's the Silver Age. That's why.
Yes, exactly. So they're talking crap to Superman, and all of a sudden he grabs a lexophone, tears it open, and realizes he knew all along that they were inside. Of course, because again, this is a Silver Age trope. Of course, he knew all along what was going on.
Right.
This is like that you'd see in any like Ocean's 11 movie too, where all of a sudden they go backwards and they show like what was actually happening the whole time. Superman realized it was them back when he was doing the tests, figured it out, played along so he could catch them. But he realizes at that point why Luthor is so upset, and he realizes that he broke up this marriage because of what he told Ardora. And I guess he feels a little bad about that. So he lets them go. They think they get away from Superman. They think they fly away from Superman, but he actually lets them go. And this is probably my favorite scene, is when they decide, they're like, okay, we need to hightail it out of here, head to Lexor. And they see the Lexaphone being thrown from Earth into space past them. It's going faster past them. And they're sort of befuddled. They think he just threw it at them, but missed.
Because, yeah, Superman's
Because,
going to miss,
yes, he's
sure.
going to miss. So anyway, they get to Ardora, or I'm sorry, they get to Lexor, and he reunites with Ardora, who he's worried is not going to want to talk to him, and she's really happy to see Lex, and he's just like, oh, what a relief! Like, she doesn't seem to remember that I'm a villain. Like, what could have happened? And Brainiac says he found the Lexaphone over by the shrubs by their house, so over by Lex's Lexor house. So it turns out basically, Superman filled the Lexaphone with amnesium, which is apparently a thing, and in more than just this issue. It's something Superman has used before. Apparently, I looked this up, and it makes you forget certain things. He threw it into Ardora's yard, where it opened up and made her forget that Lex was a criminal. So now they're happy, and we see Adora placing a floral wreath by a statue of Lex, which, like, again, he's kind of standing there a little paunchy too, yeah, and the
Yeah.
statue. You think they would have like beefed, beefed that up for Luthor a little bit, made it look a little better than that. And he's like, well, I couldn't break up their marriage, and so Luthor's thinking about Superman, saying, we're square for now, but next time I'll get you. And it's ridiculous, but it's a lot of fun. What did you, just reading this, what did you have any did you have any thoughts? What were you thinking while you were reading this?
I really loved this story. So it's amazingly complex despite the simplicity of the plot and, what you would expect for a Silver Age comic. You don't expect to get much, and on one level you don't, but it makes Luthor, it really fills him out, and I don't mean just in the paunchy way. He becomes sympathetic. I mean, you understand his motivations and you feel sorry for him, and you sympathize with him. And when you look at Superman feeling bad, now Superman, granted, he thinks at the very end, he says, or he thinks to himself, well, Luthor nearly wrecked my career, but he did it because of the broken heart of his wife that he worships. And she's too fine a girl to be hurt so deeply. So, I mean, there's still a hatred there for Luthor. He's Superman's still only doing this for Ardora, not for Luthor. Okay, fine, whatever, you know. But I think this turned into a much more complex story, and I really genuinely liked this story. I thought this was just a really nice tale.
Yeah, I liked it too. You know, I mean, I like the idea of Luthor, being a hero on another planet as opposed to the villain. It's a total con job. Obviously, he's not showing here. Who would ever think that there would be a leader who cons people into thinking he's the hero? I'm glad that wouldn't happen here.
No,
But
never.
at the same time, in Luthor's case, there's a sincerity there because he genuinely wants to. He likes being the hero. And I always felt in any incarnation of Luthor and Superman, that was the core of the rivalry. It wasn't that he hated Superman, he envied him. He wanted, he wants to be viewed the way Superman is viewed. He's like, how dare this alien be the hero when I should be the hero? Look what I can accomplish, look what I can do. And of course, he goes about all the wrong ways of trying to get that adoration. Do you like this incarnate? Do you like the Silver Age Lex Luthor, or is it like what's your like favorite version of Luthor?
So that's a tough question to answer because just like I like almost every incarnation of Superman, I like just about every incarnation of Luthor because each one brings something a little bit different. And I do enjoy the growth of a character. I'd say the Luthor that we saw in the first 2 years, John Byrne's Luthor, basically, the first 2 years post-Crisis, is probably one of my favorites. Because he was the scheming businessman. He just was almost over the top, but he was so just smart and foiled Superman at every turn and just nothing stuck to him. And I really enjoyed that storytelling. But, you know, I think the Silver Age Luthor gets painted as cartoonish because we all seem to think, at least people our age tend to think of the Super Friends Luthor, and he's, you know, at that point he's in that Super Friends costume, the green and purple, and so, you know, there's not really anything other than I'm being a bad guy motivating him, right? And so I think we think a lot of the Silver Age Luthor is only being that. This Luthor that we're getting here, and I have to hand it to the storytellers by the mid 60s. Maybe some of the Marvel stuff was kind of creeping in. They certainly weren't there at the same level that, you know, Marvel was doing in 1966. But, you know, this Luthor, like I said, you feel sympathetic for him. I mean, he is kind of a does show that bad guy, two-dimensional bad guy thing a lot in this issue, but he does have some genuine good qualities and human desires and human motivations that make you like him, that make him likable, at least to me.
I agree with everything you just said. So I'm not gonna prattle on, just reiterating what you said. But what so I did want to ask, and we'll get back to Superman because I feel like we've been talking a lot about Lex Luthor and everything. But we will get back to Superman, who's supposed to be the star of this episode. But I also want to ask what you thought of Brainiac in this incarnation of Brainiac. Now, at this point, he's almost more, especially in this issue, he's almost sort of like a sidekick or go along guy. He's kind of like. Like I said earlier, that the this breaks down. This is a very like bro episode, because there's like that Luthor at this point. Luthor and Brainiac are almost like the same person, just one's green alien and the other one's an evil human, but they kind of look the same. They're both bald guys. They both kind of talk the same way. They're both smart and everything like that. But Brainiac sort of takes a back seat to Luthor in this, which I don't think you'd see in more current renditions of them because they're very different in the more current. But what do you think of this particular Brainiac?
So, in general, Brainiac at this time to me is a little cartoonish, is a little, you know, you would expect somebody with his level of intellect to be a little bit more of a challenge for Superman. And I don't feel like he is. And this particular issue with regards to Brainiac. Certainly, he's not the Brainiac who, in Crisis on Infinite Earths number 9, kills the Luthor of Earth 2.
Right, right.
Right. This is not a killing machine type character. He very much is just a sidekick.
Yeah.
And it's a little disappointing. I mean, they really didn't even need to have Brainiac, other than the fact that if you're going to shrink them down and put them inside the Lexaphone, that's really the only way you get there.
Right.
Is by
right.
the shrink ray. So you get the one thing he's known for in the Silver Age, you use that, and that's the whole reason he's in the story.
Yeah, more or less, you're right. That is pretty much the only reason he's even needed in any of this. I agree. I mean, this is sort of a, you know, the costume is silly. He's not really making much of a thing. I mean, but he's being a good buddy, you know, he's kind of like a go along. It's like, yeah, let's go mess with Superman. Why not? You know, like, and then here, well, I'll fly you to Lexor so you can see your girl, and you know, we'll figure all that out, you know, and everything. So he's being a good buddy. So I'll give him that.
That's a good point.
But
yeah,
I mean, it's Brainiac's ship, so he couldn't. I don't know how he was going to get there without Brainiac. But anyway, but yeah, so that's cool. And they more or less get away with it too. They don't really have any repercussions from the story. I mean, they mess with Superman, and he pretty much just lets it go. All because of the whole thing with Luthor. So now Brainiac wasn't owed any of that, but I guess just because he was the go along guy, he gets away with it too. So there you go.
Yeah, you know, Superman even says that you know, Luthor must have broken him out of space prison.
Yes, that's right. That's right. Forgot about that. Yeah, he broke him out of space prison. Yeah. So he doesn't even take him back to space prison.
He's
like, oh, go ahead, Brainiac. Yeah. You got some time. So okay, so before we get into I wanted to get into a broader discussion on Superman, but is there anything else you wanted to kind of say about this particular issue?
About the story, no, although I do want to point out, I found a couple of interesting things in the art and in the story, like the odd sidekick, which isn't Brainiac, I don't believe, because he doesn't look like Brainiac. The character Brainiac is...
Yeah,
you know, hiding as, you know, this is on like page 3. In my mind, I wanted to make that Otis, you know, but which really I don't think was around in the Silver Age. But and also in that scene, there's also in that panel, there's this odd rabbit sitting in glass.
Yeah, it's like he's doing
maybe
a maze
it's going
or
through
something.
A maze?
Yeah. I don't know what's going on with that either. So
I mean, like, what a random thing to draw into a panel.
It's yeah, it is weird. Maybe that's that Star Wars rabbit that Shag's always going on about. Maybe that's the best and I will say this, his lackey or whoever that is in that panel kind of looks like Guy Gardner, doesn't he?
He does look a bit like Guy Gardner. You're right.
So maybe it's in maybe it's a Silver Age Guy Gardner. Who knows?
So I always like to kind of like look at it through the lens of modern day, like the amount of smoking that's in the issue. You've got Perry, which always has a cigar, you know, but this, you know, Van Benson is smoking a pipe. That's really about the only smoking you have are the two of them. I did look for it with the other, you know, army characters and so forth. So at least it was to a minimum, but it always boggled my mind why there was a need to show any character smoking in a comic book, but
I don't know. But yeah, they were, there was always people constantly smoking. You're right.
Yeah.
So, well, actually, you know what, before we get to Superman, why don't we talk, since we're on the issue right now, do you want to talk about some of these ads? You wanted to talk specifically about something in the letters column, correct?
I do, but I would like to hit on the ads, because that was part of the appeal, was that we both had access to the full issue with the ads. The ads are so much fun when you get, you know, have an opportunity to look at the ads from these books, especially from the 60s. There's a page on the inside front cover. The ad is titled, "Do you make life hard for yourself?" Well, yes, for comic book readers, we make life hard for ourselves, right? But the it's a public service announcement from the National Social Welfare Assembly. That's a mouthful. And I decided to look them up, and they still exist. They were established back in the 1920s. And in 2005, they changed their name to the National Human Services Assembly. And they bring together major nonprofit, voluntary, and public sector organizations to advance policy, improve efficiency, and support the human services sector. But it's things like the Girl Scouts and other organizations that I think we as comic book readers would appreciate the message they try to put forward. So, that's good. Although the it's a six panel comic, that's an ad, and it basically is preaching that you should keep your room clean, kids. Maybe it hit a little too close to home with my 13-year-old son, you know.
I'm sure it did. I'm sure it did. Yep, me too. So I like this subscription ad where you see the Teen Titans.
Let's
See that
see.
one?
Is
That's a
that
little later on.
okay? That's yeah. I
Yeah.
didn't
And
see that. Oh yeah,
it's,
that one. Yeah, that one's
yeah.
a great
And you
one.
can get 20 issues for $2. There you go. You can subscribe. You can get 20 issues of your favorite comic. Now, if you're looking at the list, can you see that ad right now? Do you
I
see the ad?
can.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, now I picked out a couple titles I definitely would have gotten. I would have thrown my $2 down for basically 20 issues. And I would have gotten the Titans. I would have gotten Superman. I would have gotten Brave and the Bold. I would have gotten GI Combat, and I think Detective Comics. I think those would have been the ones I would have gotten.
So, me being a Superman guy, I probably would have gotten Superman in action, maybe Superboy. But that gets a little heavy on the Clark Kent Superman stuff. So, there's some interesting other titles in there. Fox and Crow, which was one of their funny books. But you've got House of Mystery, Sugar and Spike, Army at War, Bob Hope is in
Bob
there.
Hope's
I
in there.
yeah, I had forgotten that they were still publishing Bob Hope that late into the 60s. So yeah, it's a pretty good selection of titles there. But the art above it with the Titans, you've got Kid Flash and Wonder Girl and Robin and Aqualad. It's definitely interesting with the what they're suggesting. Get with it, cats. We're in our own mag now.
And then, of course, there's the Ant Farm ad. If you didn't see that one, get your Ant Farm. And I think the Ant Farm was the precursor to the Sea Monkeys, I would imagine. Like
Yes,
I think the Ant Farm gave way to the Sea Monkeys. So later on that decade or into the 70s, maybe.
yeah, I was gonna say I'm pretty sure we were still seeing that same ad just with different pricing well into the 70s.
I agree. There's an ad for GI Joe
Yes.
dolls, the original GI Joe dolls, obviously, because it's the 60s. I feel like some of the characters on here were sort of precursors for Joes you'll see later on.
Absolutely, yeah.
You can see Torpedo in there. You can see Gung Ho. I don't know who else would round that out. I'm trying to think who else would round
Yeah,
out.
I mean, Doc technically, but I mean, this is the 60s, so his skin color is the same as everybody else's, which is not the way he was depicted in A Real American Hero. But like I said, it's the 60s. But yeah, I mean, my mind immediately went to Torpedo and Gung Ho on those on the Marine and on the SEAL.
Yeah, that's what I thought of right away with those. And oh, I did want to talk about the back page of the comic
Yes.
where you have the
Yes.
American Seed Company. And for a couple of reasons. One, if you the so it's American Seed Company. This is basically a company that sells seeds like vegetables or flowers or plants, stuff like that. And they use kids to sell them. You send away, they send, you don't have to send them any money. They send you seeds to sell and stuff like that. The thing that obviously, of course, I always thought of this, that it reminded me a little of later, remember Grit? They have the ads for Grit and everything like this. I always felt that these were like little pyramid schemes, of course. But the thing that obviously interested me the most was the address for this place is Lancaster, Pennsylvania, which is where I grew up.
Oh,
So I
okay.
was born and raised in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and I have no recollection of the American Sea Company. Now, I did check that they are no longer, there is an American Sea Company, but it's not the same. And it is in Pennsylvania, but it's not Lancaster, and it's not the same company. It's another company because I looked it up and they said they've been in business for 33 years. So it obviously couldn't be this one in 1966. And so I tried to look up a little bit about them and even like Google things like, was it a scam? Things like that. And as far as I can tell, there's no mention of it being a pyramid scheme or a scam or anything like that. But they always make it, they have these little testimonials. They have these little, photostats of kids at the top, saying how easy it is to sell seeds. Everybody wants seeds, and all this stuff. So I thought that was pretty funny. I don't know if you had any thoughts on that or not.
Yeah, no, that's great. I mean, it's you've got the prizes you can win, like a Kodak Instamatic camera and baseball gloves, and I mean it reminds me of the Sea Monkey ads too. It just there were always those ads. Actually, it reminds me a little bit of the ads that have like the X-ray specs,
Sure, absolutely. Yeah, yeah,
that replaced this later on. But yeah, these, I mean, how can you not want to do this? I mean, hey, it says send no money, we trust you, use these coupons. And I, of course, if you're willing to cut up your comic book, maybe
yeah.
that might not be a good thing. But yeah, these things were so much, it's so much fun to see this kind of
Sure.
stuff. It really does bring back some good memories.
Yep. And there is also an ad for Batman issue 179, which makes an alliteration. So it's a issue where they're battling the Riddler. Do you see the one I'm talking about?
Yes.
Okay. And they make alliterations to Fiddler on the Roof. And I was like, well,
Right.
why would they do that? Because they're really like kind of forcing the pun. I'm like, why would
Right.
they do it? So I looked it up. And the year be so this comic came out in 66. In 1965, Fiddler on the Roof won 9 Tony Awards. So it was obviously very
Wow.
present of mind, a smash hit on Broadway and everything. So I think that was probably why. And it was including Best Musical. It won a Tony for Best Musical. So I guess, they were trying to tie into the success of Fiddler on the Roof at this point. So it was.
Well, maybe they're hoping like a parent will see this and be like, oh yeah, okay, let's go
Yeah.
spend my money on Batman comics,
Yeah,
This is a
exactly.
good thing.
Yes, exactly. Yep. Any other thoughts on the ads or anything?
There was one other ad, the Christmas in January from AMT ad, which is a half page ad.
Oh,
It's
yes.
about halfway through the Superman story, because there's also a Supergirl story that we're not covering in this issue
Right,
or in
yeah.
this episode. But
Yeah, sorry, Dr. Ange. We didn't have time for that, unfortunately. We had to cut that, unfortunately, but
which on
there
the
is a
opposite
Supergirl
page,
story, yes.
yes, there is a Supergirl story in this issue of Action, but the 80 page giant Supergirl that they mention in
Yeah.
the ad opposite, boy, I would love to pick that one up. I need to go and look and see what was in there, because you've got this Supergirl meets the Legion of Superheroes, her first romance, and then of course you've got Supergirl's Super Games with Superboy, which, okay, continuity, but and then her own Fortress of Solitude. So I want to go seek that one out. I like
That
the
yeah, that did look pretty good. What issue of Action Comics is that? Does it say? Or is it?
It's 80 page giant, I think 620, which of course, some of
I
those they
couldn't.
don't make, maybe not. I It's really hard for me to read in my copy here.
Oh, okay. All right. I'll try to figure that out. I'll see. Like that might be I was just curious. Maybe that's available on website as well. So
Yes, let's
if I
hope.
do happen to see that, by the way. Like I said, all these ads I took photos of and they will be on the gallery.
I'm sorry, I was able to zoom in finally.
Yeah.
It's 80 page giant G20, which also says Action Comics presents Supergirl in an all-star collection of stories, and it says number 334.
While we are talking, I will see if 334 is available. And if it is, then Dr. Ange can read it on the it is available on Altar. So there you go. You can read this on the DC Infinite Ultra, whatever it's called. So if you have that, you
Fantastic.
can read it. It is Action Comics issue 334. Yep. So you can read
That's
the whole
amazing.
Supergirl thing. Absolutely. So there you go.
So I do want to mention, though, real quick, this
No.
Christmas in January from AMT. It's
Yes.
an ad for one of their models, and AMT is aluminum model toys. And for those of us that are geeks that know this kind of thing, you may think of AMT, or what AMT at least reminds me of are Star Trek models. And that's because around this time, AMT got in with Gene Roddenberry and they started producing Star Trek model kits, and they continued producing them for years and years, including through the movies. But one thing that AMT did in exchange for building or being able to sell the Star Trek models, they actually built a three-quarter sized exterior and a full-size interior for the shuttle that you saw on the show, the shuttle Galileo.
Oh,
So the
wow.
screen, what you saw on screen in episodes in the Star Trek show, was built by AMT in exchange for being able to make Star Trek model kits.
Oh, very interesting. I wasn't aware of that. Yeah. I did see him. Yeah, that was a pretty cool ad. I completely forgot about that one. But yeah, that is. But that's very interesting. I wasn't I didn't know they did that. I'm not a big Trekkie. I feel like that's kind of like one of those aspects of geekdom that I never I appreciate Star Trek and I've seen the movies, but I don't know it that well. So that's cool to know. So I did want to get back to Superman a little bit before we, before we wrap this up and get into the fantastic questions.
Do you want me to hit the letter page right now, or do you want to wait?
Oh yeah. Do you want to talk about that first? Go ahead. Yeah,
Okay.
absolutely.
So the other thing I wanted to mention was the letter page, and I had no idea this letter was in there until I read this issue, but I feel like this letter was written toward me to a degree. And this was the very first letter in the Metropolis mailbag. And it was written by Ellen Macaroni from Farmingdale, New York, where she says, "Oh, brother, we readers can accept a lot of the impossible stuff you print, but egad, another universe? Several times you've referred to another universe in your stories, yet the word universe means one. Therefore, there can't be another." Ellen, I can't even begin to have a conversation with you on this. So,
I don't Miss Macaroni, I hope you I hope you kept reading because you're in for some surprises as the years go on. But who knows, maybe she became maybe, you know what? Maybe she listens now to the monitor tapes and has realized now that, like, all these years later, that, oh my goodness, there can be more than one universe. Tell me
Let's
more.
hope. Let's hope.
Tell me more, David Doug. So you never know. Maybe she is listening now. So shout out. What was her first name again? I'm sorry, I'm not looking at it at the
Ellen.
Ellen Macaroni. Shout out to you from Farmingdale, New York, which I believe is in Long Island. So anyone's maybe she co-wrote with Marv Wolfman. Who knows? Got
Maybe
something to
she
do with
was
it.
the one that wrote him that letter that sparked the whole thing to begin
Could
with.
have been.
Who
Could have
knows?
been. Maybe it was her. So anyway, so I did obviously want to get back to our star of the show, Superman, a little bit. And we talked about him in the beginning when you so eloquently put what makes Superman important. But what did you like specifically about Superman in this Silver Age? And if I haven't mentioned before, for those in the Fantastic Lounge who aren't too familiar with the ages, Silver Age is more or less from the time the Barry Allen Flash appeared, which is about 1956 to about 1970. That's kind of about, I mean, roughly, that's about when the Silver Age happens, to about one from about 1955, 56 to 1970. What did you like? What did you think about Superman or the Silver Age in general? Why did you want to kind of talk about? Because this was definitely one of the eras you wanted to talk about.
There's a certain fondness that I have and a certain simplicity to the stories from the Silver Age. And I think for me, part of it is, and I've told the story a lot lately, so I apologize if anybody is hearing this again, but I had, when I was a kid, I guess it was kind of a trade paperback, but it was a hardcover book called Superman from the 30s to the 70s. And clearly, when you're including things from the 30s to the 70s, you're going to hit a lot of the Silver Age. And so that's where I picked up my love for Superman was from this book. And I had that probably when I was, 6 or 7 or 8 years old, somewhere in there. So prime time for me to start really reading and getting an appreciation for Superman. And so I just have this great fondness, despite the continuity supposedly that exists or doesn't exist, or the simplicity of the storytelling supposedly, or the silliness that we sometimes get with these Silver Age stories. It's charming. It just reminds me of an easier time. Like I think about when I read this issue, for example, I think about this wouldn't be a single issue of Superman today. This would be like a 6-issue arc written for the trade. We'd get a couple issues of Superman breaking down. You'd not find out that Luthor was behind it until issue 3. There'd just be all this bulk to the story. And not that there's anything wrong with that, but at the same time, this is a one and done story. It's really encapsulated. And yeah, there's those things we talked about that kind of spilled over into this with the, Lexor and his wife and Senator White and so forth. But for all intents and purposes, this is just such a joyful story. I mean, at the end, it hints at, there wasn't a happy ending. In that, there wasn't a final resolve, right? You've still got Luthor and Brainiac out there on the loose. Superman isn't necessarily happy with the way things turned out. Luthor isn't necessarily happy with the way things turned out, but they turned out as best as they can for each of them. But like I said, it just is it's a joyful story. It's got a problem and then it has a solution and it's all wrapped up in one issue and you can move on with your life from this. You don't have to, there's not this years of continuity and years of things you have to think about, which granted, you probably should be reading comic books without having to worry about that. And I know that for myself, I have that problem picking up comics today. I worry about picking up, I haven't read Marvel since the early 90s. And so I'm afraid to pick up Marvel stuff that's a new issue today because I just think to myself, oh my God, all this continuity from the last 30 years, how. But at the same time, it's like, why burden yourself with that? So I think going back to this just really kind of helps cleanse the palate from that and just gives you a chance to just pick one up off the shelf. You can just pick a random issue anywhere, right? Like you said, you have no idea why you have this issue or when you picked
No,
this up.
none. Yeah.
But the fact that you have it and you can read it and get joy out of it and not, I mean, yeah, you did the research to figure out some of this stuff, but we also didn't have to do anything to enjoy the story.
Oh, sure, absolutely. No, it's all encompassing. It's all there. It's all there on the page. You don't have to do anything else if you don't want to. You
Exactly.
don't have to read 12 other issues. You don't have to watch six different television shows. You don't have to do anything. It's all right there. And obviously a lot of the Silver Age is inherently silly, and a lot of the Superman mythos around this time is inherently silly. But at the same time, I have the same book you're talking about. My dad was a teacher, and when I was little, I would go to see him at work, and they had that book in his library at their school library, and I would always check it out, and I just basically kept checking it. They had that one, they had the Batman one, and they had a Wonder Woman one too, and I basically just circled through them, cycled through them. I would check one out, bring it back, get the Batman one, get the Wonder Woman one, go back to the Superman one, and just keep reading them over and over and over again, just pour through. So yeah, I mean, Superman is so he's so black and white in this period, but also at the same time, at times he's an unrepentant skirt chaser. At other times he's doing psychological warfare to every woman who's ever fallen in love with him. It's he will go to any lengths to protect his secret identity, no matter the cost, in a lot of ways. He is unimaginably powerful that he can somehow struggle with the Toy Man, but also throw the Lexaphone across the universe. I mean, just all these things, they go back. He can go back in time, or he can cross cross the galaxy or do whatever in a matter of a couple panels, not even a couple pages, a couple panels. He can have an affair with Helen of Troy, and then he can go to the future and hang out with the Legion of Superheroes and do stuff in between. It's just so much. It's unapologetically fun, and that's, do I like other versions of Superman maybe a little bit better? Probably. But part of that is because I'm just older and maybe I want to read a slightly more complex story or something like that. But these are so nice. It's so nice to be able to go back to this. And that's why I'm so grateful that I have some of those comics, these little time capsules, from the 60s that I have no idea where I got them. And I have some from the 70s and the 80s, and then the 80s and 90s, and I have them all after that. It's a fun look back. Like you said, the nostalgia is there, but it's not just nostalgia. It's just welcoming. It's a warm bath. It's just a nice thing to go back to and enjoy.
I'd say that in the same way that, the Adventures of Superman TV show is comfortable, that the Silver Age Superman is comfortable, right? It not complex. It's a simpler time. It just his character, yeah, he had plenty of flaws. You just listed them all out. But I think that's part of the appeal as well. It's like what scheme was Lois going to do to try to find out his secret identity? And what scheme was he going to do to get around it? And you get lulled into this false sense of security. Security isn't even the right word. Like, I got fooled thinking that he really was having problems with his powers. And yeah, he was having a little bit of problem, but I got fooled past the point where he had figured it
Figured
out.
out. Yeah.
And maybe that's just the storytelling and my simple brain not picking up on it. But the reality is I don't want to pick up on it, right? I want to just enjoy this Superman for who he is, this comfortable, warm blanket of a character who's flawed, but at the same time is good, and represents what's good about, people and good about Earth and good about just storytelling. And it made me feel good.
In the end, he always saves everybody, so that, and that's all you can, that's all you can ask for. Yeah, I agree. This was really nice. This was a fun way of having Superman on this show, and just a fun period of time, and just lighthearted and just enjoyable. And it was so nice for me to dig through my collection and find this comic, of course, bagged and boarded and everything. It's not slab. I don't think I'll ever slab anything. I'm not doing that crap. But so I took it out and I was able to look through it. I ended up reading it on the app, but because I didn't want to risk damaging the book too much or anything. But I did look through it. Just so I could see the tangible thing, I could see the ads and just see how it looked in the wild, I guess, so to speak, and then go back to the safety of the iPad, so I didn't damage anything. Yeah, it's great. It's a lot of fun. So I thank you for wanting to do a Silver Age comic, because that's a lot of fun. We've covered a lot of eras on the Fantastic Four so far, but nothing in the Silver Age. So that was a lot of fun. So I really enjoyed that. Is there anything
That's
else
great. That's
before
great.
we get to the Fantastic, the last call? Is there anything else you wanted to say about Superman? In any respect, is there anything you wanted to say about Superman?
He will always be my favorite. And I think that's something that I saw from James Gunn with the newest Superman movie was just some real joy, kind of getting back to the, a little bit of the silliness and the dorkiness. I mean, this is a kid from Kansas, and they talked about from a going meta for just a second, they talked about, Superman wears red tights or red, underwear on the outside because it makes him look a little bit silly and it kind of disarms people from being scared of him. And it's a fantastic way to kind of look at it. Like, it's okay that his underwear is on the outside because if you think about him just as a concept, he is scary.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
You
Yeah.
know, especially this Superman. Like you said, he's just patrolling Metropolis. Meanwhile, he could push the planet Earth out of his way
Yeah.
if he
Yeah.
really
Yeah.
wanted to, So I really just as long as we can continue having different versions of Superman, I'm always open to different interpretations of this concept. But to kind of go back to, just that truth and that person that Siegel and Schuster created that wanted to do good and do good for the little person. And I think the Silver Age Superman, despite how different he is from the Golden Age Superman in regards to his power set, I still think that is the heart of the character, and I think that's still captured in the Silver Age, and I think that's captured in the Superman movie. So I'm glad that you were open to the Silver Age Superman, and it really made it a fun time to be able to be on the show to do that.
Yeah, well, thank you. I can't say anything. I was going to add some more, but you know what? You guys don't need to hear from me anymore. That was a perfect way to surmise it. Thank you, Dave. So, Dave, it is last call. So, in this segment, I asked my insightful guest, DC Dave, some thought-provoking questions. It came to me as I prepare for the show. I asked the questions. Dave fascinates us all with his answers. Now, as always, I have provided Dave the first two questions ahead of time, and then there is a third mystery fantastic question. So, are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay, fantastic question one. If there was a distant planet similar to Lexor where you were revered that was called Dave World, what would your world look like? What kind of society would exist there? And name the five laws of Dave World.
So I ran this by my wife, and she made sure that my ego was not too inflated by this question. But I would say Dave World would have to be an Earth-like planet. Temperate, not too hot, not too cold. Sweatshirt weather half the year, shorts the other half. No Florida humidity,
Oh,
more
man.
San Diego-like, which is where I'm
Okay.
from
All right.
prior to coming to Orlando. So that would be a necessity. But I need some hills, which is something Florida does not have. But you have to not be too far from a tropical beach. That's a requirement for my wife. Or too far from a mountaintop so that you could ski or snowboard, build your snowman. So, having said that, the five laws of Dave World. One would be dog parks everywhere. Gotta
Okay.
have dog parks. I've got two dogs, two big dogs. I love my dogs. Love taking them to the dog park.
Now,
Dog parks everywhere.
what is the Dave World technology as far as dog poop? Do we have bags, or do we have something a little more advanced, or what do we have here?
I'm glad you asked that question because I almost just blurted out my answer without you even asking.
All right.
The technology would be there for it to be instantly scooped up.
Very good. Like little robots flying
Teleported.
around or
Yeah,
teleport.
no, like
Oh,
teleport. It
teleported.
happens
Interesting.
and
Well, where's it
ported
go?
away.
Where's it, or don't
Well,
we want to know?
you don't want to know,
All
but
right, very good.
no. It would be recycled appropriately so that we'd be reusing.
Goes over the Doug World. Is that where it goes instead?
I like that idea. I think it should go to Doug World. Yes.
Right.
Yes. So, two, time enough to contribute to society in some way, but yet time enough to pursue your hobbies at no cost. So, a kind of perfect balance to work and life. You don't have to, there's not any money here, but you do need to do something in the way of work type thing to make society function. But, being able to, just relax and do your thing,
I
be
like
it
that.
podcasting, comic book reading, whatever,
All right.
Number three would be, and this is kind of a shout out to my son, who's an ice hockey player, ice rinks and free ice hockey lessons for everyone.
All right,
I
very
suppose
good.
ice skating could be included in that as well.
Yeah, you
So,
might need skating lessons before you get the hockey
yes,
lessons.
yes.
Yeah, okay. All right, very good.
Number four would be unlimited budgets to make all the live action and animated comic book films we want.
Oh, very good. Very good.
So if we wanted to see 12 issues of Crisis on Infinite Earth in a live action with every single character that George Perez drew on screen, let's do
Oh, wow. That would be
it.
amazing.
Rule number five, this one's the most controversial of all, no billionaires.
Oh, I like that. I think everybody likes that.
Yes,
Very
except
good.
for the billionaires.
Well,
They
screw
strangely
them.
don't like that.
Yeah, well, the hell with them.
I agree.
So again, this is Dave World. So where do you stand on? Are you a benevolent dictator? Are you sort of a man behind the scenes, like an Oz, or like what? Or are you just kind of like a man of the people? Are you sort of
I
like
would
how do you
prefer.
how do you rule? Do we have a capital of Dave World where you function from, or you just sort of let like one of your rules is obviously that everybody has to contribute to society, and we're going to go by that this doesn't need to be enforced. This is one of your laws, and this that's just we're going to go with that. We're not going to get into the nitty gritty of requiring law enforcement and things like that. But what does Dave do on Dave World?
See, Dave would prefer to just be like everybody else.
All
Just
right.
live by these rules, live comfortably, and enjoy life. I don't want to be burdened with
Right.
the thoughts of ruling. I just want this to be.
Okay.
So I would hope
Okay.
I could just blend in like everybody else. And but I suppose if we need a ruler, then it would be a benevolent dictator. You will do it this way. You will not be a billionaire. You will have ice rinks
Okay.
and you will have dog parks.
Okay. But you sort of just walk amongst the people and maybe just kind of incognito. And
Yes.
maybe if somebody's like, "Hey, aren't you Dave?" And then you can kind of like just look at the camera and wink or something like that, like
Yes.
one of those
Yes.
deals. Okay.
If you remember the final Silver Age Superman
Yes,
story,
that's yes, I was
right?
thinking about that.
Right.
Yep.
At the end of I think it's Action Comics 583 is the last of the stories, and yeah, he gives a little wink to the camera.
Yeah. So you have
I'd
to
like
grow,
to
you're
do
going to have to grow a mustache as well, doesn't
that. Yes, exactly.
right. Very good. All right. Well, very good. I really like that. Okay. So fantastic question number two. I know from our earlier discussions that you are a big fan of kryptonite. If you could create three new kryptonites, what would they look like? Color, what would they look like? Stuff like that. And what would they do to a Kryptonian?
Okay. Well, we have here three different types. The first one would be black coffee kryptonite.
Okay.
And that would give the Kryptonian the ability to have extra bursts of energy for about 2 extra hours at a time.
Oh, all right.
That way you could get some stuff done. You're caffeinated.
Yeah.
I would imagine regular caffeine doesn't really affect a Kryptonian.
No, I can't imagine it would. No. So this is now, is this in liquid form or what is this? Is this just like, is this sort of like a mocha color kryptonite or like what?
Yes,
Okay. So what,
I'm
just
thinking like obsidian kind of,
okay. Is there a
I'm
black
making you.
is there already a black kryptonite? There's
There
got to be
might
a
be a
black
black.
kryptonite.
I'm sure there's a
I
black
don't know, maybe there
kryptonite.
is. I don't know.
Yeah,
Somebody in the
but
Fantastic Lounge can let us
yeah.
know if there's a black kryptonite. But okay, so but just their exposure to it. In other words, they don't have to like drink it or something like that.
No,
They
they don't have to
just their
chew it up. They don't have to do
exposure
it. Just yep.
to the coffee, black coffee. Did you say black coffee kryptonite? Is that what you
Black
said? Black
coffee
coffee kryptonite.
kryptonite.
All right,
Yeah.
very 2 hours of extra energy. Kryptonian could do a
Yes.
lot in that time.
Yeah,
Absolutely.
absolutely. And
Okay.
on Dave World, even more.
Well, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. They could take on a few of the jobs, that are required of society while, maybe some people take a vacation to the mountains to do some
Yeah.
skiing. So that's good.
Yeah,
All right.
exactly.
Very good. Okay.
Exactly.
All right. All right. What else?
Kryptonite number two, pink kryptonite. Now,
Pink
pink
kryptonite.
kryptonite would give the Kryptonian the ability to help people get their heads out of their asses, help impart some intelligence, understanding, sympathy, and grace for their fellow
Interesting.
human beings.
Interesting. Now, this only works on Kryptonians, though.
Well, I mean,
Okay.
your caveat is it has to
Yeah,
work
that's
on a
true. I did. I
Kryptonian,
did. Yeah.
so I
Okay.
will go with that. So it gives them extra persuasive ability.
Right. The Jor-El could have used that to toss at the council, when he was trying to talk
Yes.
him into some stuff a while ago.
Yes, absolutely. So may there are quite a few people around here these days that need their.
Yes, there is. There's a lot, a countless amount at this point.
Yes.
Yeah,
So if we could
especially
get a
where
little
I
extra
live.
help.
Especially where I live. I could you
Yes,
could
yes.
send a few. I could toss them a couple miles down the street
A little
and they
pink
could.
kryptonite meteor shower right there over where
Yeah,
you
that
live.
would be
Yeah.
helpful. Yes, it would.
Yeah.
It would. Okay, one more.
Okay, one more. And I will admit I didn't even notice the Kryptonian caveat until just
That's
now.
all right.
So
That's all right. You know what? You can erase that if you want. Actually, I kind of like it better if it's not, it doesn't have to be a Kryptonian. So I think we
Okay.
can make much better use of the kryptonite if it's not a Kryptonian, because I could definitely
Well,
use the black coffee kryptonite on
right.
occasion. Yeah. So but that's
Yes.
fine. It doesn't have to be a Kryptonian. Forget about that.
Okay. Well, this one, I mean, the occasional kryptonite does affect humans, so this is
Sure.
one that
Absolutely. Yeah.
I think could affect humans. That would be Lego kryptonite in the shape
Oh.
of a Lego block.
Okay.
And this has two abilities. It turns you into a master builder, along with making your feet invulnerable to feeling pain when stepping on Lego.
Oh gosh, I could use that.
There
I
we
could
go.
use that. Oh my God. I'm sure, like a, you know, we are both fathers. I'm sure you are well aware of the pain of stepping on Legos in your bare feet. I've done
Far
that
too
a
many
thousand
times.
times. Oh my God. It's
Yes.
I still can't believe how much it hurts. That's the thing that
Then
can't
that's why
happen.
we need Lego kryptonite.
Yeah, I like that. I like that. I could use all of these right now, actually. So, great job. Great job, Dave.
Thank you.
Okay. Mystery fantastic question. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay. If you could change three things that happened in the Great Crisis, what would they be? Now, this could be somebody dying who didn't die. This could be somebody not dying who did die. This could be any changes, any plot changes. You know, or you had Marv Wolfman's ear, much like Miss Macaroni probably did when this whole thing started. If you had Marv Wolfman's ear while he was writing Crisis, and you could just be like, "Hey, Marv, let's do this instead," what would the three things be?
The first one would be to explore the post-crisis world that was shown at the very end of Crisis on Infinite Earths number 12. So this is where it's kind of an epilogue. It would be nice if we had a longer epilogue. And that would be, we have at one point we have Superman looking at his fortress and he's got his arm around Power Girl. So the two of them definitely have experienced loss. They are trying to figure out, kind of what their relationship is, perhaps. They are cousins but aren't cousins necessarily. That was something that has intrigued me for 40 years is that just even that panel. But you had other
I hate
things
to
that
think
were
what Silver Age Superman would do in that time when he has his arm around Power Girl, but anyways, sorry, I digress.
No, that's okay.
Okay. So
There's a panel out there. Just go look for it,
yes,
folks.
it sure is.
If only they weren't cousins,
sorry,
That's a great one, though.
So yeah, they were talking, and the Psycho Pirate, and there are some. So, if I'm remembering correctly, we do see a snippet of post crisis Earth. Is that what in is it issue 11 as well? Do we not see that?
The start of issue 11, yeah. So the final appearance of the pre-crisis multiverse is at the very end, basically your last panel of issue 10.
Okay, yes.
And then issue 11 starts with the Golden Age Superman waking up in Metropolis
Right,
and
and he's all thrown out. Yep. Okay.
So I mean and to kind of build on that. Well, let me not build on that. Just let's get some more of what's going on in the post-crisis universe. And I guess I will build on that to say that as part of that, all these heroes in issues 11 and 12, they because they were at the dawn of time, they remember the pre-crisis multiverse. So what, I mean, they eventually all forget, and we see that sometimes very quickly, sometimes it took a little while, but like how are these characters trying to reconcile? Like you have Jay Garrick, you see Jay and Joan Garrick, the two Supermen find him pretty early on in issue 11. And Jay remembers the multiverse. Joan does not. Joan doesn't even know who the Earth 2 Superman is. So how do those people reconcile two different universes? And what was the history then of that pre-crisis universe? So how does all that get reconciled? And so I would have liked to have seen a bigger exposition or bigger, I would have liked to spend more time in that
Gotcha.
universe.
Gotcha. Yeah.
as opposed to the one that came just a few short months later with Legends and Man of Steel
Right.
and the post-crisis, what would be the official demarcation line of the post-crisis universe.
Yeah.
So I think number two then would be a better exploration of the alternate Earths before we got into Crisis.
Sort of like a prequel to the crisis, like where you,
Oh,
or
yeah,
like a
like a
handbook
prequel.
or something like that, like kind of along the lines of Who's Who, but maybe somebody
Yeah.
deals like with the Earths instead.
Yeah, in fact, that's a great idea. Kind of like a guidebook to the multiverse, similar to what they did for Multiversity. With Multiversity, there was a guidebook and they kind of
Yeah,
showed,
but
the
that was so
52 Earths
brief. It
go.
was, you know, the like,
Right.
yeah.
But,
Interesting.
we only found out, like at the beginning of Crisis, we are kind of led to believe Blue Beetle is on Earth One. And it's only in issue 4 or 5, I think it is, where we find out, no, he's actually from Earth Four.
Right.
Here's this Earth we've never visited. And we've never really kind of gone back into what really was Earth Four and what those Charlton characters were doing and what
Right.
was really the history there. It's just kind of assumed, which is fine, but it would have been nice to kind of build on that a little bit.
Now, obviously there were infinite Earths, so he couldn't do all of them. Are you talking about just kind of the primary ones? I mean, Earth One and Earth Two, I don't know if we really need to focus on because everybody knows about those two. But you're talking like Earth Four with Charlton characters, Earth S with Shazam characters, with Earth X with like Uncle Sam and the Freedom Fighters, and when Earth Three was the Crime Syndicate, right?
Right,
So those are
right.
kind of the main ones, and I guess then there was the Earth where God, I don't remember her name. Who is the woman whose, I guess, whose husband and daughter die in the antimatter wave? She has a sort of like the really short white hair,
Yes, that's
long
Lady
shape.
Quark.
Lady Quark, that's right.
Yeah, and her husband, Lord Volt, and her daughter, Fern, I think is her name,
Yeah.
Princess
What
Fern.
Earth were they? They were from a different Earth, correct?
Yes, they were from
Okay.
Earth 6,
Okay. And
which
we
is
had never
another Earth.
heard of until that was basically a made up Earth for the crisis, correct?
Correct,
Okay.
correct.
All right.
So,
Okay.
yeah, I mean, so little places like that, like we have no concept of
Yeah.
what that Earth was about, what was going on. It was, and I mean, it potentially has a very rich history,
Sure.
but we just don't even know. And then, kind of to build on that a little bit, Shag mentioned this on my show recently, which was Earth 8. Earth 8 was not an Earth we knew about, but in Infinite Crisis, Alexander Luthor hints that Earth 8 would have been the modern day, as of that time, Earth. And so, in other words, that's where we would have had like Breach being the Captain Atom of that Earth. Kyle Rayner would have been the Green Lantern, the
Oh,
only Green
yes.
Lantern.
The legacy characters, more or less.
Correct.
Yes.
Correct. The legacy
Okay.
characters. So, and yes, it's great that DC got all this legacy now built in by having one Earth post-crisis. But, I kind of always had the idea that, you could have just moved to another Earth and just never visited Earth One again. But I
Yeah.
don't know if anybody was willing to do that at, 1985. But that kind of leads into my final thing, which is I wish this had been better planned. Coming out of post-crisis, I wish we would have had a better plan. Now, what that better plan is, I don't know. And I've told this story before where, I think it was 14-year-old me at a San Diego Comic-Con DC Comics panel stood up there and said, "Why didn't you guys just start over with new number ones for everything?" And they kind of, nodded and said, "Yeah, that would have been a great idea."
Oh, you said that at a Comic-Con?
Yeah, I
Oh,
did.
really?
Yeah, 14-year-old me said that to the
To who?
panel at to, gosh, whoever was on the DC Comics panel in 1986. I don't think when I was 14,
Yeah.
1987 maybe.
Oh, cool. Good for you.
Yeah, I wasn't afraid of it
Yeah.
then. And I
When it would, sorry, not to interrupt you,
go
but
ahead.
just to clarify, when you're saying that you wanted them to have a better plan, are you talking about a better plan throughout the crisis or post-crisis?
Post-crisis.
Post-crisis. Okay.
So instead of, and this is a little bit, talking about the epilogue, but this is distinctly different. because, you know, we have what we had, and I would have liked to have explored more of what we saw in 11 and 12.
Sure.
But that got pushed aside for what really happened, you know, with man starting with Man of Steel number one, which is what
Right.
I consider the start of the post-crisis universe, really.
Man of Steel number one, you consider the beginning of the post-crisis? Yeah.
Yeah, really, to me, that's really where you get a really hard line in the sand
Yeah, no,
of,
I think that's completely fair,
you know.
absolutely. Yeah.
But I would have liked there to be a much larger coordination of what is going to come out of the crisis. Where are all our books going to go? Let's start over with number one, new number ones for everything. Legacy numbers aside, let's start over with new number ones. Let's let this universe expand organically.
Okay.
So not even like a new 52, because new 52, you know, they that first arc in the Justice League was kind of like 5 years
Five,
ago.
yeah.
And then it jumped to the present day,
Right.
right?
Yeah.
But I would have, and I get the feeling, not that I've read any of the absolute titles yet, but you know, that's over a year old now. People seem to like it. I get the feeling that might be a little bit of what I'm kind of imagining.
In a way, I'd say it's a, I don't want to use the phrase a darker take on the character. It's definitely different takes on the character set in a darker time. They are definitely worth reading. And again, that's something else that's on the Infinite. So if you don't want to pick up issue by issue, or you could get the trades or something like that. I do highly re both all three series of the main series. I mean, Superman, Wonder Woman, and Batman, they're all very good. So it's surprisingly so, honestly, because when they said it was going to be this take of these characters in like this universe created by Darkseid, I was like, oh my God, you know, what is this going to be like, more the Batman Who Laughs stuff or something like that? But it's
Yeah.
not. It's nothing like that. It's good storytelling. It's well done. It's original takes on all three characters. It's not just a rehash. Sorry, that's an aside, but I would recommend you giving them a shot, because I
I
think
do
they
want
are
to give
very
them a shot,
interesting.
yeah.
Yeah. So I'm sorry. Go ahead. So you wanted them to start from, and you were saying you kind of like Man of Steel number one basically was a retelling of his origin. You know, the Man
Yes.
of Steel miniseries, which was six issues by
Yes.
John Byrne. Yeah, basically
Yep.
retold Superman's origin from the destruction of Krypton up to, I guess, was supposed to be at that point present day Superman, or more or
Right.
less. And then his adventures continued from there. So he was a new character. Now, did you want them to do, so when you're saying that, you wanted everybody to basically start it, for lack of a better term, year one. So you wanted, like, did
Yes.
you wanted Dick Grayson de-aged? You wanted him to be a kid
So
again?
I
Or like, would you?
And
Yeah.
that's a tough one to answer,
Yeah, it is
because
tough. Yeah.
everyone loves Nightwing, right?
Yes.
And Nightwing was George and Marv's baby. So that wasn't going to happen.
Yeah.
But I also would have loved to have seen, you know, this is that concept of moving to a legacy Earth, like Earth 8, where you're just kind of, you've got the concepts and you start over, you know, like George's take on Wonder Woman was amazing. We're
Yes.
talking about George Perez,
Yeah.
covered fantastically on the network by Sean Ross. Yep. And, you know, so here's a fresh take on the concept and moving it forward. I would have liked to have seen, like, I don't know, just everybody starts over. Maybe you do de-age Dick Grayson. Maybe he was never Batman's partner. I'm not sure. This is the non-creative in me saying, I
Right,
don't know
right, right.
how to pull this
Right,
off.
right.
But if you had all new number ones and then you just kind of let it grow organically, does a Justice Society or Justice League happen? You know, obviously there's going to have to be some sort of team, but how quickly do
Right.
people get together? You know, is the relationship between Batman and Robin, excuse me, the relationship between Batman and Superman, you know, is that how they depicted it for a number of years post-crisis, where they were kind of adversarial to one another, or do they become fast friends? I don't
Right,
know.
right, right.
But, you know, if there was a chance to make it organic as opposed to just, and don't get me wrong, I love John Byrne and I love everything he did those 2 years he was with Superman, but I kind of felt like it was a purposeful take to have him be adversarial toward Batman as
Yeah.
opposed to organically
Right.
having that happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And that, and a lot of that stemmed from Frank Miller and everything. Like, that character assassination of Superman still sticks in my craw to this day, because I feel like it jaded an entire generation of comic book fans against Superman, thinking he's this lame character. Or to this day, that bothers me, the way he was depicted. I wish they had never even used Superman in that, in the Dark Knight thing. Just left him out of it. Sorry, that's an aside too, but I just, to this day, that bothers me, because it's a
It
terrible
bothers me
depiction of
too.
him. Yeah, because that's
When I
not who
said
Superman is. He would not be a tool for the
exactly.
government. He would not be a lapdog for Reagan or any other president.
Exactly. And that's when I said earlier that I love almost every iteration of Superman. This was one of the reasons why I couldn't say I love every iteration, because that's not one that I think is in character. Yeah, I agree with that 100%.
And that sort of, and from there, years down the road, it seemed to stem to the evil Superman, the version of evil Superman, like in every, it just drives me nuts. That's been, driven into the ground. I mean, the Injustice series was fun and ridiculous and silly, and he was basically like a re I viewed that Superman as like a wrestling heel, more or less. He was always like, even
Yes.
though he was all powerful, he'd get beaten up all the time, but then he'd cheat and he'd win and he'd get away with it, and everything, which was fine. That was one version, but everybody didn't need to take that and run with it, just leave that in that universe. But
Well, I think the only other thing I would say about that interpretation of Superman is that also led into then Superman is boring. Superman doesn't have, there's no good stories with Superman. And I think that's just the case of somebody that's never taken the time to read a good Superman story. And there are tons of good Superman
Yes, there are.
stories. And when you get somebody that knows how to write Superman and tell that good story, then you get blown away by what a good Superman story is. And there's so many good Superman stories out there.
I agree, and I would recommend to anyone the current Superman titles, Superman Unlimited, Superman Action Comics, which is actually focusing more on him. They're kind of bringing back his life as Superboy. Prior to that, I would recommend any of those titles for the last few years. They have been wonderful, and they really depict Superman as this beacon of truth and justice that we've been talking about. And they're all terrific. I would highly recommend them. So yeah, well, that's good. I had to get in a crisis question, of course,
Well, thank you. I
because
appreciate that.
I wanted to have a nice tie into your podcast. But I love the crisis again, like I talked about before. It was the it's probably the seminal moment of my comic book reading, because I was about, when that came out, it was like, that was kind of like 85, 86. I was, I was basically like 14 years old, so
Yeah.
that was boom. That was it. So, and once I weasel my way onto the show, I will definitely talk more about the tie to Phil Collins, but that's for another day.
That's a
So,
hook that's got me. I'm gonna have to jigger up that schedule a bit.
All right. Well, David's closing time. So I listen, I can't thank you enough for being on the show. This was so much fun. It was great talking Superman with you. Where can listeners find you?
Well, thank you for having me on the show. It's been a blast. I loved my lemon drop.
Good.
I can't thank you enough for having me on the show. So, if you want to find me online, you can find me and my co-host, Doug Adamson, at the Monitor Tapes, a Crisis on Infinite Earths podcast. And you'll find that at themonitortapes.com. And who knows, we might have another show or two coming soon
Good.
to the Brick Crisis Network, which is our own little network, which you'll find at brickcrisis.com. And you can find me on all the socials as DC Dave Podcast.
All right, very good. Well, thanks again, Dave. It's great having you on the show. I will have a link to your podcast in the show notes as well, and we will be right back.
Hey there, everyone. My name is Michael Bailey, and I host a podcast called It All Comes Back to Superman, which is currently on its second series. On July 11th, 2025, a new Superman film, written and directed by James Gunn, is coming to theaters. And not only will a new Superman enter the chat, but a new generation of Superman fans will enter the fold. To celebrate and mark this occasion, I'm embarking on a series of episodes called Moving Kryptonian Images, the live-action and animated adventures of Superman. Starting with Superman and the Mole Man and going all the way to the new movie, after it comes out, of course, I will be talking about all of the, well, live-action and animated Superman films that have been released. It's right there in the name of the series. I'm really not burying the lead here. But I won't be alone. Every episode will have a guest host or hosts joining me to talk about these movies. Some are old friends and some are brand new. Some I've podcasted with on numerous occasions, and for some, it will be our first time speaking. No matter the case, it will be a fun, sometimes silly, sometimes serious look at these films, what they mean to Superman, and what they mean to us as fans. The series kicks off on February 3rd, and barring real-life interruptions and a quick stop in April for my JSA April episode, the show will run weekly through August, when I end everything with a giant feedback, if I get any, episode which will also feature my personal rankings of the Superman films. From George Reeves to Christopher Reeve, from Dean Cain to David Corenswet, from Tim Daly to Matt Ballmer, Moving Kryptonian Images will cover them all. It all comes back to Superman Series 2 is on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and iHeartRadio. And you can find the home base for this and all of the other shows in the Fortress of Baileytude Podcasting Network at www.fortressofbaileytude.com.
We're back. If you like what you heard, support the Fire and Water Podcast Network on Patreon at patreon.com/FW Podcasts. There you can unlock various rewards, including being name checked on the show of your choice. Sean Ross and now Jay Campbell have chosen the Fantastic Four. Welcome to the lounge, Jay. Sean and Jay really consider themselves the Brainiac and Luthor of the Fire and Water expanded universe, but still quarrel over which one gets to wear the Brainiac briefs. So I'll let you guys figure that out. If you, dear listener, choose the Fantastic Four, I will send you a free canister of Amnesium to use at your leisure. Or at least find some fun way to mention your name on every episode. Now, here's the feedback from episode 15 with Shotgun featuring Frogman and a maple syrup cocktail. Attempting the two-man luge with Shag, FW Godfather and host of Fade Out, Rob Kelly says, I hope the screenwriters of the upcoming Ocean's 14 are tearing up their script pages because that's how movies are still written nowadays. And starting over, setting the action in Canada and sending Danny Ocean on a maple syrup heist. Great to hear one of the Ohotmu girls escape from Siskoid's harem-like containment and appear on another one of the network shows. The fact that they all find Frogman hot gives hope to the rest of us pale, dumpy nerds. It wasn't mentioned on the show, but this man, this frog title, has to be the always impish J.M. DeMatteis parody of the classic This Man, This Monster issue of the Lee Kirby FF. I always metaphorically drop whatever podcast I'm currently listening to when a new Fantastic Four appears, and this month was no exception. Love the show. Thanks, Rob. I appreciate that. Killing his personal best in the short track speed skating, Gothos Mansion says, I think Bambi and her roommates were among the people who helped Peter move out of that apartment, and they were never seen again. I could be mistaken because I had to give up buying new comics when I went to college. I hadn't planned on learning so much about maple syrup. I live in Alabama. There is a town called Lacapoca. I'm going to say Lacapoca. That has a syrup sopping festival every October. To tie it into sports, the festival is always scheduled on a Saturday when Auburn University doesn't have a home football game. That's probably smart. Lacapoca is a short distance from Auburn, and I'm sure game day traffic would hamper attendance at the festival. Auburn is a lot easier to pronounce and spell than Lacapoca. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, Gothos Mansion. Thank you. Nailing a double axel, FW All-Star Siskoid replied to Gothos Mansion, Peter crossed paths with Bambi during the Horizon Labs era, and he was delighted to catch up with her. The Misfits were never seen again, however. And Gothos Mansion replied to that with, if it happened in the 1980s, I probably don't remember it. If it happened during the 80s, well, I probably don't remember that either. Thanks, Gothos Mansion, and welcome to the Fantastilounge. I think that's the first time I've heard from you. Thank you. Hitting his throw jump with Siskoid in Paris figure skating, FW All-Star Sean Ross says, Brett and Shotgun, great episode. Am I the only one who now wants to see the Muppets, the great maple syrup robbery? I love the issue of Amazing Spider-Man you cover on this episode. It was the early days of Peter David. He was still in Marvel's marketing department and trying to break through as a writer. They would throw him inventory issues like this, and he would knock them out of the park, which got him to go on Peter Parker, the Spectacular Spider-Man, in a year or so after this issue. He brought such a unique and fun voice to Marvel and DC. Yes, he did. Sliding those stones and curling, Bucky 749 says, I did some research and Spider-Kid made a return in a couple of different stories with a new identity of Steel Spider. Spider-Kid was a Doc Ock fan until Spidey saved him and set him on the right path. Here's the fantastic question. If the Misfits did get their own ongoing comedy four-issue miniseries, who would you want as writer and artist and main villain? Would you keep Spider-Kid as Spider-Kid or set it in the future so he could be the Steel Spider with Frogman as his mentor and Toad as the goofy, lovable, former bad guy uncle? I'd go with the White Rabbit with a girl gang as the villains and maybe move them to Tokyo for the covers to parody the Bad News Bears. Wow, I don't know where you come up with some of this stuff, Bucky. But to answer your question, I'd have to say I'd have Scotty Young write and draw it. I'd keep him as Spider-Kid, and I would definitely have White Rabbit as the villain. That's a great idea. Got his nickname from his bobsledding heroics. Nate the Great says, weirdly enough, I think Frogman might have been better known than the Toad at this point when this issue came out. He had been in some very good issues of Marvel Team-Up also at this point. Peter David was really known as the hot new Spidey writer. He will always be one of the best. Frogs must be getting hot these days between this show and the ads for the new Muppet show. I didn't know there was a new Muppet show coming out. Oh, and there's a lot of talk about maple syrup without mentioning waffles. Yeah, you're right. I don't know. I think we mentioned pancakes, but you're right, Nate. I'm actually more of a waffle guy than I am a pancake guy. So absolutely on the maple syrup on the waffles. Having second thoughts about half-pipe snowboarding, Edo Boznar says, another fine show, and Shotgun was a great guest. I thoroughly enjoyed the conversation. As for maple syrup, I can confirm that it works great as a topping on ice cream, especially vanilla. Thanks, Edo. Catching some serious crosswinds in the ski jump, Fantastilounge regular Dr. Ange says, great episode with one of the best ever, Shotgun. I am a breakfast for as the best meal of the day guy, in particular pancakes, waffles, French toast, so I'm a big maple syrup fan. Never thought about putting it in a cocktail before. Interesting. Crazy issue to cover, but love that all the characters available, she chose Frogman. Hot squad, never change. I agree. It was great. It was perfect. Experiencing sheer terror during the skeleton, John Seib says, another fun episode of The Poor. Isn't that what all the cool kids are calling it? That is what all the cool kids call it, John. Absolutely. I am a big fan of Frogman because he always seemed like the hero that could be you. Me? Question mark. I am also a fan of Leapfrog, so maybe I just like villains who's sproing. Finally, I enjoyed all the maple syrup suggestions. I am definitely a fan of breakfast for dinner, just like Ange. Maybe you guys can have breakfast for dinner sometime at a comic convention or something like that. Anyway, he was saying, I am definitely a fan of breakfast for dinner, so I'd like my maple syrup on a stack of Aunt May's wheat cakes. Cheers. Thanks, John. Forgot his rifle in the hotel for the biathlon. Big Frank says, what is Frogman's power? Just sounds like he has springs in his suit and can jump a bit. I remember Toad from the first X-Men movie. He had some ups and a long-ass tongue. Storm took care of him. Great episode. Learned a lot about maple syrup in the heist. I agree with you that I would never have thought to put it in ice cream. And please share the recipe. Oh, yeah, I will. You know what? I should share that cookie recipe. At some point, I absolutely should be. It was a great recipe that Shotgun shared with me. You hit on a lot of my thoughts during the show. Knocking off comic book store, I had to go back and make sure I heard that correctly. Must have been personal. And the Toad trying to set up Spider-Man, not cool. And Bambi, cha-cha-cha. All right, keep it up, my friend. I'm also happy to post this, but I'm not sure if the commentary thoughts go with your crowd/target audience. No. So Big Frank is a good friend of mine from college and everything like that. So he's a little, he's not really in the nerd realm that most of us are. But I always appreciate him listening. He's a great friend. And always, again, Big Frank, everybody's welcome in the lounge. So, of course, feel free to comment any way you want. Thank you all who listen. Be sure to subscribe to The Fantastic Four, available on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, and Spotify. And of course, please leave a 5-star review. The Fantastic Four is a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. You can find all episodes of The Fantastic Four and many other quality shows at fireandwaterpodcast.com. Please leave comments on the website. Let me know what you think of the show. I read all feedback at the end of every episode. You can follow us on Facebook at FW Podcast Network, Blue Sky at FW Podcasts, or use our hashtag online at hashtag FW Podcast. I can be found on Instagram and Blue Sky at Imaginate Design. Thanks again to DC Dave for hanging out at the Fantasta Lounge. Until next time, the bar is open.